think he said he wants to go to the SpaceNet report.
Something wonky is going on at all, sir. He's cutting you off before, which is what he usually does. This time he cut me, he went back on it. I couldn't hear your audio, and you couldn't hear my audio, so I'm back to RF, and hopefully they'll reboot all start sometime this week, and it won't happen to us the next time. So, I saw the film that you mentioned. He was designing basically a current loop radio where it's not wireless. The idea was that he wanted to show people a long-distance way of catching audio signals without producing RF as a sign that you were being bugged. So he came up with a current loop design that uses Ethernet cables as the loop. He used a couple of op-amps, some transistors and such. And pleasant little design. I don't know if it lends itself for the average individual. Now, how many of us want to bug our house in a way that that a bug detector won't find it?
Anybody using the Sullivan machine? How do you copy?
You sound fine.
Okay, who just said that?
AC2GS.
Oh, okay. Because, all right, very good. Yeah, I know, I'm listening to myself, so I sound okay. But you guys, not so good. There must be an issue with Glen Oaks. Okay, so we'll do the space report. That's okay. Maybe by the time I finish this, repeater will clear up. By the way, whoever was talking about the spray, the red spray for the battery, that company is Lynx, LYNX. Very good product. I use it all the time for just what he said for battery connections, like on your car or a boat, which I don't have. But yeah, very good. Let me drive it. Let me just do the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. This is WS2N. Okay, very good. Well, looks like the Sullivan repeater is okay. I was going to talk about another astronaut that we lost last week. It was 2 weeks ago when I was on last week. That was Mattingly. We lost him. At the time, he was the oldest astronaut out there. But now, just the other day, we lost Frank Borman. Frank Borman was one of the three. He was the commander on Apollo 8, first time people actually orbited the moon. Launched on Apollo 8 and wound up orbiting 10 times around the moon before they actually came back. Bill Landis is with them, and Jim Lowell. And that's the famous flight where they were orbiting the moon on December 24th, on Christmas Eve. And they got to read from the Book of Genesis. And, of course, that eventually became very controversial later on. Some of the atheists didn't like that idea. So, but anyway, that made the news. And, that was a big deal back then. He made it to, 95 years old, and it would have been good if he could have lasted another year or two, because Artemis 2 will be going up either the end of next year or the beginning of the following year. And that'll have a crew of four. When he did it, it was a crew of three, and now you're going to have a crew of four orbiting the moon and then returning to Earth, and that will be the flight before the actual next flight. After that would be a landing. But Frank Borman did a little, he was also on an earlier flight on a Gemini mission. He was on Gemini 7. But that was an Earth orbital flight, and that was the first time they wanted to really test out rendezvous, and they did that with a Gemini 6B, they call it 6A. But actually, flight number 7 went up before 6A. They were on a 14-day flight, him and Jim Lovell. So Gemini flights were all two-man flights, and they got the rendezvous with Stafford Chirac. But, you know, they didn't dock, but they actually came within a couple of feet of one another. And if you're old like me, you could remember the Lifetime, the Life magazines, when they used to have pictures all the time, space pictures in Life magazine. They're beautiful pictures of the two spacecraft taking pictures of one another. So anyway, we lost Frank Borman anyway. He was one of the good guys. When he retired, he became a spokesman for Eastern Airlines. I remember doing commercials all the time for Eastern. Any comments for anybody that could make the repeater okay? This is WS Flight. Okay, interesting flight could be coming up within a week or so. They're actually predicting November 17th, which is this Friday, be the earliest possible chance for the Starship to launch. Starship, of course, the one being built by SpaceX. Last April, they launched the first one, and it had 63 different things that they had to fix because it went up. It was supposed to go around the Earth and deorbit around Hawaii. It didn't get that far. Got over the Gulf of Mexico. And the second one, it separated from the second stage. It had problems. They started spinning around, and flight termination system failed. So that's one of the things that they had to fix up. They had to actually do it manually. It should have blew itself up automatically. But there was a delay on that, and there was a lot of other repairs that they made with the next flight. So hopefully this super heavy thing gets off the ground with the 33 engines for their booster, and then the Starship itself above it, which is another 153 spacecraft, will use six Raptor engines to try to get to orbit. It's not going to do a complete orbit. It won't make it all the way around the Earth. It'll get as close as north of Hawaii, and then they plan on deorbiting it at that point. They have all kinds of cameras. They're going to take pictures to see how it does, but that would be a big success because they have contracts with NASA. Not to mention their own manifest that they're trying to fill with the big rockets. These rockets are bigger than the Saturn V rocket, way bigger. Saturn V was 7.5 million pounds of thrust, and this thing's going to wind up eventually twice that amount once they get everything tuned up on the initial flight. We'll see how they do. So they've made a lot of changes. They have water suppression systems. That big difference from last time. And they're hoping it doesn't destroy their launch facility like it did last time. So, I'm wishing them luck. 20,000 some odd people work for this company. I'm sure they're all anxious to see this thing get off the ground so that they can do future work. And they have many other starships already almost completely built, and a lot of them are on the way. I mean, there's at least five or six more that they're developing right now. But we'll see. The whole system should be reusable. Somewhere down the line, the booster itself will eventually be coming back to land where it took off from. And the same with the Starship, which is essentially the second stage of this whole system. And someday they plan on putting not only cargo in there and satellites, but people. We'll have to wait to see how they do. Any comments on Starship? If they go up, it will be sometime the earliest, like I said, Friday. Then we can report on it next Sunday if it makes it. Okay. Hearing nothing anyway, let me move on to another interesting flight. being put up by the Defense Department, which involves, you know, the Space Force and all of that. Really doesn't involve NASA at all. Yeah, they might put a couple of experiments on this thing, but this is really paid for by the defense budget. It's called the X-37B. It's going to be launched now on a Falcon Heavy rocket. They got a contract with SpaceX to put this thing up. It's a reusable spacecraft. It's flown 6 times before. It's like the size of a shuttle, maybe 25% the size of a shuttle. It has heat tiles on it to protect it, similar to what the shuttle had. Of course, it's unmanned. But it has the capability of not going up for months, but going up for years. Each flight gets longer and longer. You know, they started off by setting up, you know, for maybe 300-400 days, and that time frame has increased over all these different flights to the last one. The last one was over 900 days, so you're looking at almost 3-year flight times now. It's time to deorbiting the X-37B. They do just that, and it eventually comes back. The earlier flights landing in California on Edwards Air Force Base. They have a 3-mile runway out there, and then the latest flights have landed back in Kennedy on the old shuttle runways. And when they land, you see guys come out in hazmat suits to prepare the vehicle from being, brought back to the hangar. You know, it does land. It's got parachutes that opens it up, slows it down. But it does have hydrazine on, for all the reaction control jets. They could be cancerous. That hydrazine is no bargain. So that's why they're out there with hazmat suits. This thing was built by Boeing. And it's been flying since, I believe the first flight was 2010, so almost 13 years ago. A lot of people said, whatever happened to the shuttle? Well, when is NASA going to send up a Dream Chaser? Well, this thing has been going up for years. And it comes back successfully, lands on wheels. Dream Chaser will be launching soon, and that's but with a private company. Sierra Nevada is building that. And that's a similar type of deal, about the same size as the X-37B, but all cargo, and that will, first 6 flights will be to the International Space Station. They have a contract with NASA to bring cargo up, but Sierra Nevada has plans of eventually creating another one of these things, which will eventually carry people. First one is called Tenacity. And it has a piece on the back of it called, Shooting Star. They call it Shooting Star. And then that will also have cargo on board, so you can bring up maybe 14,000 pounds of stuff to the International Space Station, and then also bring back around 5,000 or 6,000 pounds of stuff. And they would put it on this extension piece on the back. Shooting Star would eventually separate from Dream Chaser and burn up in the atmosphere. Dream Chaser would come back and be able to land on any runway. It's not going to be restricted to what the X-37B does. And when it lands, it won't need hazmat suits either, because the fuel for the reaction control jets, it's like a green fuel. It's not hydrazine. So it's safe to be around. So time marches on. Of course, that will be reusable as well. So, I'd like to see this X-37B get off the ground. That will be December 7th. So it'll be probably a month from now. And speculation of why they're using the heavy version, Falcon Heavy. Falcon Heavy is same thing as the Falcon, but it's really 3 Falcons in one, three boosters in one. So it's got a core and then two boosters attached to it, separate it for 2 minutes, and then the upper stage brings the payload to orbit. So they're trying to figure out, you know, naturally the military knows, but there's got to be a reason for why they're doing this. Launched, like I said, five times it's launched on the Atlas V rocket, which is a little less powerful than the Falcon Heavy. But that was the standard way of putting this thing into orbit. And one flight they did use the regular Falcon instead of the Atlas V, the SpaceX Atlas V, SpaceX Falcon rocket. But now they're going to use the Falcon Heavy somewhere down the line. I'll eventually find a reason for that. Maybe there's more fuel involved. Maybe there's a different kind of booster that's inside the fairing that we can't see that's going to be used. Maybe they're going to have two satellites. One's going to float away, and this thing's going to be taking pictures of the other one, seeing if it could dock up with another piece. Who knows? It's always a big secret. And that's what happens when the Defense Department gets involved with the space technology. You know, we get a rough idea of what's going on, but it's not like NASA. The space budget for the military and the defense is over twice the amount that when NASA spends. So they're always, you know, trying to cut NASA budgets, oh, it's too much money. Meanwhile, you know, a lot of these space flights that go up have nothing to do with NASA. Amazing. Any comments? This is WS2N. I haven't ID'd in a while. Okay, this is a short story, but this has to do with people that like to look through telescopes, like to be able to look at the different planets, and coming up very shortly, when you look at Saturn, regular telescopes, you're not going to be able to see the rings. Take Saturn roughly a little short of 30 years to make one full orbit around the sun. But as it does, the axis changes. So the point of view that we see Saturn changes, and sometimes it's almost the rings are almost like looking at it. You can see them very clearly. And then as the orbit goes around the sun, eventually wind up having an orbit with the rings edge on, and that's what's going to happen for about the next year and a half. It'll be edge on, so people looking for the rings, they're not going to see it. You know, they'll be able to see the countless moons now. I think there's 50 or 100 moons or something going around Saturn. You might be able to see the sum of the moons, but the rings are going to be gone because it's going to be edge on. Of course, that will change after a year and a half, and then they'll come back into view. And then, you know, roughly every 15 years now, you run into the same situation in the upper part of the rings and then the lower part of the rings. So it doesn't have a 30-year orbit. I thought I'd bring that up. I used to go out and look at the planets, but not lately. Any comments? Okay, nothing heard. Wanted to give you a Curiosity update. Curiosity, of course, is the rover that landed on Mars in 2012, and then we had another one just, 2 years ago, 2020. Actually, landed 2021 was the Perseverance rover. Those are both still active. The planet is surrounded by 7 active satellites. One of them is China. Another one is the UA, United Arab Emirates. They have one. And then we have three of them, and European Space Agency has 2 going around. A couple of them that they're still going around, but they're not active anymore. It's one by China. I think China might still be working, correction. But another one by India has stopped working. So anyway, there's around a total of 9 spacecraft either sitting on Mars or flying around Mars. Up to check if I think China is still operating. That would make, they also have a rover on Mars. That would bring it to 10 space vehicles that are operating. That won't be operating for about a 2-week period because they're going into something called conjunction. Solar conjunction is, you know, we're on one side of the sun, and in this case, Mars will be on the opposite side of the sun. So the transmissions on our RF does not really like to go through the sun's through the sun at all. With all the radiation and RF that's coming off the sun, nothing makes it past. So we won't be able to transmit to the spacecraft, and they won't be able to transmit back. But the rovers will get assignments from mission control before this happens. They'll let Perseverance and they'll let Curiosity know what they wanted to do for the next roughly a two-week problem. Then a couple of weeks from now, when Mars comes away from the sun again, they'll transmit back. They'll let mission control know how they're doing and if they completed whatever task they had them do. You know, might be traveling somewhere or drilling another rock or photographing something. Any comments? Okay, I'm dying to find out how my transmission's doing. I hope I'm not vibrating like you guys were doing it. You all sounded like you were underwater before. This is WS2M.
You're sounding good as far as I'm concerned. They must have rebooted the All-Star Link. Echo Link went down, I think, because I'm the only person left on it. The whole system kind of blinked for a moment and reset itself. So you're fine.
We're set and filled.
Good to know, Roy. And you sound Dave Joe as well. Somebody else just said something?
Yeah, I appreciate 100% and filled.
Okay, stand by, Wesley. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I was just telling you, 100% in Sylvan.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And was it you that was talking about the spray for batteries? Or was that somebody else? It was going back and forth. Back to you, Chris.
Yes, that was.
Okay, yeah. I jotted it down on the... on the chat room, but anyway, it's Lynx is the product. Does that ring a bell? That's what I use. LYNX. It's made by Penn East Penn. They make batteries, all kinds of car batteries. But the spray is Lynx, LYNX. Does it ring a bell? That comes out red.
Yes, actually, that's the correct one. So the one I said before, I think I said Joe Hansen or something like that, which popped in my head. Which is more of a cleaner, I think. The one you just said is the right one. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I've been using it on my car batteries like forever. And I've tried it on a couple of ham connections as well. This stuff is impervious to the weather. I mean, it's a really good product. And it's been around like forever, Chris. So, very good.
Absolutely. And I used it on all kind of terminals on the boat that were right out in the sun and water, get sprayed daily with salt water. And I think if you wrap that with the silicone tape, you're golden forever.
Yeah, I concur. I don't have a boat, but I would imagine it would be great, you know. Down by the water, you live near the water, you always got the salt water to contend with the salt water air. You definitely want that, you know, not only on your boat, but, you know, car battery as well. Sometimes you get that oxidation area that you wind up with the terminals. You open your hood, you know, what the heck is this? And you realize that, you're building up this stuff on your wires. Well, this stuff, if you spray this stuff on, that will never, ever happen, as far as I know. It just does not happen. You know, you get it into the connector, when you bolt it up to your positive and negative terminal, on the connectors, everywhere, and it just works very good. All right, let me continue on. I got a couple of more topics here we can cover. WS2.
just quickly, Paul, I heard you say the rings are disappearing. We'll be looking at sideways. That's actually depressing. I look at Saturn all the time in my scope. It's really cool to see. Kind of a bummer. I never even thought of that, that it would twist that direction. Very interesting. Anyway, K2SDP.
Yeah, it does. I got a Selectron, the telescope, which is really no bargain. But, I mean, it works. I can see the rings. Well, not for the next year and a half, anyway. So it'll make a comeback. That's for sure. Now, there was, who was that, Wesley? Wesley was going to say something before. N2XJN, go ahead.
Two questions, not directly related. Originally, when they were trying to build International Space Station, they saw it like a bus stop. So it could be like a transit station from one point to the other. Why is not like that? That's first question. The second question is there totally no future for the old program that stopped with the shuttles? Back to you.
All right, you're doing good, but you are a little over-modulated tonight. You have an all-mode rig. Were you on sideband earlier where your gain is turned up?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had the processor on. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my guess is that's what it sounds like. Yeah, otherwise, I'm sure you're DFQ. You're asking about the International Space Station. When they were building it, they were going to do something else. Repeat that, please, Wes.
Yeah, I remember at that time they were saying that one of the possible uses of International Space Station would be like a bus stop from one point to the other. Back to you.
Okay, as a something stop, like a bus stop. Well, from one point to another. Well, what would be the other point? I'm not really sure of what you mean. Unfortunately, I know it all started in 1999. I could tell you every piece that ever went up. But back to you, Wes.
Yeah, I remember at that time, 1999, right? And there was a news that if they build International Space Station and they have some tasks to do in space, eventually, International Space Station will be like a bus stop or emergency place where they can stop and eventually wait or refresh themselves and then come back to the Earth. But it happened that nothing of that is in use.
And I had to go up and spend 6 months at a time up there. But, they would, let's say that they were going to go to the moon. They could use the space station as a bus stop and then head to the moon and return that way. Yeah, well, it's not economically worth it to do that. You'd be docking unnecessary multiple times. But you do know, I think I'm sure I've talked about it before, they plan on having Gateway. Gateway will be a space station around the moon. You have a couple of Artemis flights that are going to be going up. Artemis 2 that's coming up, I've talked about that before. In a year or so, that would be orbiting the moon. Then you have Artemis 3 after that. That's scheduled to be the one that actually first lands on the moon. The way that's supposed to happen is they're supposed to dock with the SpaceX Starship. From there, the Starship will take the crew down, land on the moon, eventually come back, and dock with the Gateway. Gateway will be in this really long elliptical orbit. I mean, we're talking about 11,000 miles away from the moon, and eventually, like, 1,000 miles close to the moon. So perigee will be 1,000, 11,000 will be apogee. It'll take 11 days to make one orbit around the moon. So that, you know, you're eventually going to have a, let's call it a permanent crew. It won't be permanent. They'll take a month at a time on the space station. And that crew will eventually meet another oncoming crew, dock with that space station, go down to the moon, come back up. Time goes on, they plan on having a second human landing vehicle doing the same thing instead of the Starship. They got Jeff Bezos of Amazon and a couple of other companies, Lockheed and everything, they're working together to build another vehicle that will be able to do the same thing. You send the Orion on the Space Launch System from Earth, go out to the Gateway Space Station, which is in an 11-day orbit, dock with it, and then same thing. Instead of going down to the surface on a Starship, from SpaceX, you'll be going down on another spacecraft being built by Amazon, it's called Blue Origin is the name of the company. And the name of the vehicle is going to be called Blue Moon. But the International Space Station, it's really a science research setup. And right now they plan on leaving that up until 2030. Now, recently, last month or so, I read that this talk about extending that again. That's happened many, many times. I mean, originally when Space Station was built, like you said, it was 1999, when they sent up the Zarya cargo block. That was the first piece. And eventually that attached to Unity, which was brought up by a space shuttle. And it got built from there. But that whole setup was only supposed to last 15 years. Here we are, you know, 24 years later, and it's still operating, and they keep getting extensions. So there was plans on eventually having private companies, as we probably know, build their own space stations. Eventually that will replace what NASA does in low Earth orbit now. NASA will be concerned with the Gateway space station around the moon and leave low Earth orbit to private companies. So, I don't know. That's pretty much what I know about it. If you ever want to look at the construction of the space station and the way it took place, yeah, you can find a lot of things on the Internet. But I did a presentation that's still on YouTube. If you bring up Limark and you bring up the YouTube section or the different presentations, you find one with the picture of the space station on it, and that's about an hour and 15 minutes. But it goes through all the different modules, you know. It goes through the first one, like I said, was Zarya, and then Unity went up there with the pressure mating adapters. And then that was followed by Russia brought up the Zvezda, that big module with the whole crew with the Russians, and then we went from there, you know, Destiny, Harmony, Tranquility. Then the Japan started sending up. They sent a couple of up called Kaibo, and European Space Agency sent up the Columbus module, which we have AM radio. Our ham radio was in that one, and it became a 15-module living space. A little more now, a little bit more. Because Russia sent up two more modules in the last few years. So yeah, no end to that thing. And I think I'm making a prediction it'll probably go at least until 2032, 2034. I'm hoping. Any comments? WS doing Wesley, if you want to comment on it, I don't know if I covered your question or not. Back to you.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you very much for that. Second question was, is it like the space shuttle program is totally dead and nobody's looking at a dead form of transportation longer? Back to you.
Well, yeah, after 2030, you know what I mean? Right now, it's scheduled to go to 2030. But yeah, they have many more crews going up there every 6 months. Send one crew up, another crew back. Russia's still doing the same thing. They send a crew of three up, crew of back, three back. We're doing four and four. So that's why you have constantly seven people on board now. Sometimes you have 11, you know, because before they send a crew back, they always send the extra crew up. They hang out for a couple of days, and then a couple of few days later, then the other crew returns. So the mainstay of the space station is seven at a time. You have a couple of companies now that are trying to build their own space station, and I've gone over a couple of them. But I see one has some potential now. They call that thing. That's by the European Space Agency. They want to build something called Star Lab, not Sky Lab, but Star Lab. That's they'd like to put that up by 2030. And there's a contract signed with American company called Voyager Space and Airbus. And Airbus makes that, you know, they make these gigantic airplanes in Europe. What is it? 380, I think. Anyway, that company got involved. They plan on building this one massive base station that could hold four people on a regular basis. You know, of course, it's all expandable, but they have big plans for that thing. And there's actually a lot of money getting poured into that system. Sierra Nevada has a plan for an inflatable space station. Not sure how that's doing. Then they were supposed to team up with Blue Origin to build they called the Reef, and that would have been a massive space station to handle about 10 people on a regular basis. I haven't seen an update on that in probably 3 years, so I'm not sure if the Reef is. I'm sure it's still on the drawing boards, but I don't think they're going anywhere with that yet. Yeah, I mean, there's plans on replacing these things, which is doable. You know, China, there, Tiangong space station up there, they have three people on a regular basis. So it's weird, you know. You look up in the air, there's always a minimum of 10 people flying around in space. They have three, and we have seven. So things really moved on. Last week, I said that the amount of people that were shot up into space this year, well, they've come to an end. Nobody, you know, China's not putting any more people up by the end of the year. We're not putting any more people up. But a total amount of people, you know, put into orbit and also these suborbital flights that have taken place up to, like, 57. One of the suborbital ones, the Virgin Galactic, they have the Unity vehicle that has been flying up and down to, you know, for one flight every month the last couple of months. They've been doing pretty good, but now I just read that they're going to probably cancel this after January or February. Their plan is to build a bigger one of these things. Right now they can handle six people, you know, pilot, co-pilot, four passengers. And they want a bigger one. It's called the Delta for now, the Delta flying space plane. Again, not orbital. Suborbital, which I don't get, but that's what they plan on doing. They think they're going to still get customers instead of just $400,000 each. They think this new vehicle, the Delta that Virgin Galactic wants to build, is going to bring in $1 million apiece. I don't think so, but maybe I'm wrong. Any comments? WS Talk.
One more question, because the time is 11. Russian involvement. Anything they did, even in International Space Station, either they had a hole drilled with the drill, or any kind of malfunctions, or when they dug too hard, that all station actually had to be repositioned. isn't like a trend right now to eliminate them from cooperation in any other programs? Back to you.
Yeah, I don't think any one country, including our country and the 21 countries involved with the European Space Agency, try to tell any country that, you know, that's already involved with the space station that, you know, we don't want you anymore, you know. It's up to the country themselves to back out. You know, don't forget, these are all scientific, civil agencies that are involved in these things. You know, just like through the Cold War, we had the Soviet Union, which is, you know, much bigger operation than what Russia is now. Russia is down to, you know, compared to the Soviet Union, like night and day, you know, an elephant compared to a mouse. But, you know, their technology is still okay, but they have problems. My guess, of course, is financial. You know, they're not pouring the money into it. There's also a lot of corruption involved. So they're not what they used to be. And it caused a lot of problems. And they're supposed to work things out with NASA before they make a move. NASA apparently is signing off on this stuff, you know, as things happen. But, you know, politically, Russia really wants to pull out of it. They want to separate their modules and fly off by themselves. You know, they have I think they have a half a dozen modules that they want to separate and become their own space station. I don't see, but you know, knows. But now we use them. We use them especially for propulsion.
That's complete.
Pretty much the agreement between NASA and the European Space Agency and Russia. You know, we do all the power. You know, we provide now 230 kilowatts of power, where Russia supplies the propulsion. You know, to move the space station. Yeah, it constantly has to be done. Otherwise, the whole thing would deorbit eventually. But you know, we're getting around that because we don't trust Russia and. NASA has been planning for many years to be able to push the space station along by themselves. And they used to do it. When shuttle used to go up, before the shuttle would come back, they'd know they had extra fuel on shuttle. They would push the whole space station, and they would gain like 14 miles higher. So they used to do it. But since they've been gone, we haven't really had a capability until the last two years ago. One of the Cygnus cargo vehicles sent up by now Northrop Grumman, used to be owned by Orbital Science. Northrop bought them up, but you know the Cygnus spacecraft, which is a cargo vehicle that's launched by Antares, also built by Northrop Grumman. They found a way where when that thing is docked to the space station, they can reorient the space station in a certain, they change the attitude of it, and then they fire the rockets on Cygnus, and they're able to raise the space station. They've done that, I think, twice already in the last couple of years. So we have that capability, but, you know, in case Russia does decide to bail out for any reason. Wesley, back to you, WS2N.
Thank you very much for all of that information. It's 11 o'clock. Time is up. And thank you, Dr. Roy. And to Ishii.
I think you get very good. Thanks for standing by as well. All this time, Wesley, thanks for that. And thank everybody that listened to me and participated. And we're going to turn to Roy. Of course, this is the Limark TechNet, and this is the Space Net portion of that, and Limark always has a Club InfoNet on Monday night, so tomorrow night at 8:30 on these repeaters. Check into that, hopefully, and that's always followed by Swap and Shop, which knows what they'll have. I know they had the Ham Fest today. I didn't go, but I'm curious to see how that that worked out. Anyway, over to you, Roy. AC2GS, this has been WS2N for the Space Net Report. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS, our rebels now are done. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the Space Net Report. Thank you for all that you do for this technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I especially appreciate all the work you put into this. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I'm sorry for the slight technical snafu towards the end of my segment. I do want to add that I looked up the source of the engine that runs the antenna simulations. It's a product of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. You two, for $110, can get a non-commercial license to use it on a free front end of an antenna simulator. So, as always, I'd like to remind people of a couple of good quotes. Dick, K2RIW, who ran this technical net for many, 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 many years, would often end his tech nets with the request for everyone to be kind to each other. That's always good advice, but in these troubling times, it's even better advice. So please be kind to everyone, friends, enemies, associates, neighbors, what have you, strangers. That's the least we can do. Also, good old hepatitis. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep your mind open and available to assess new information. Don't become dogmatic. Don't lock yourself down. Don't be like those poor people, the previous generation, who all had VCRs that flashed 12 until they became silent keys. So, again, thanks to everyone. I hope you had a good time. I hope you learned one or two things. I hope you'll join us next Sunday when we do this all over again. So, as I'm given to say, Slava Ukraine, this is AC2GS, and I am clear.
AC2GS, KD2VHD.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
W2L repeater.
1:55 a.m. Temperature 30 degrees.
W2.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2HL. W2HL.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2. W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
5:01 a.m. Mostly clear. Temperature 30 degrees.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
M. Clear. Temperature 31 degrees.
W2.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is M. Temperature 30 degrees.
W2.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL.
NY2H7CGS.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2L repeater. W2L repeater.
Good morning. 10:55 a.m. Temperature 43 degrees.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2L repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
KD2AKX, KD2AKX, KD2IU.
Yeah, what's up, George?
Hi, John. Did you ever hook up with Jay?
No, never got a phone call.
Now, we were communicating last, somewhere around 10 o'clock last night, right?
Yep, that's right.
That may have been a little late for him. Let me check my phone and see if he sent me any info today.
Morning.